and welcome to the second edition of Surgical 411. My name is Pierrette Price-Arsenault of the Ontario Surgical Quality Improvement Network, and my guest today is Dr. Duncan Rosario, Chief of Surgery, Oakville-Trafalgar Memorial Hospital. Duncan is also Medical Director of the Oakville Surgical and Virtual Care Programs and Assistant Clinical Professor, Department of Surgery at McMaster University. Most recently, he has been appointed Chief Medical Officer of Sigma Health Tech, a company that offers virtual care solutions. Dr. Rosario has been published in numerous healthcare journals, including the Canadian Journal of Surgery and the Canadian Journal of Physician Leadership, with topics ranging from a systems approach to the management of acute surgical pain and reduction of opioid use, to the importance of the patient experience, to virtual leadership. Certainly, Dr. Rosario has a wide range of expertise. Welcome, Duncan.
Thank you very much, Pierrette, and thank you very much for the honor of speaking with you about topics that I have a great deal of interest and passion about.
Oh, that's great. During our 2019 Committed to Better, Reducing Infections After Surgery campaign, Halton Healthcare had so much success. Your team saw a 21% reduction in SSI and a 27% reduction in UTI in general and orthopedic surgeries. So given that many teams have chosen to work on infection reduction as part of the current Enhancing Recovery campaign, what was the most effective change idea or ideas that you implemented?
When it comes to implementing change with regard to surgical site infection, most of the low-hanging fruit has already been picked. As you know, we understand the germ theory of infection, and we understand the importance of preoperative antibiotics before selected surgery, of using sterile instruments, sterile technique. So the big wins in surgical site infection had already been obtained. So the further incremental gains involved doing not one or two things, but it involved doing a series of different things, all of which had a small incremental improvement. And that's the concept of the bundle, because if one intervention produces a 0.3% improvement or a 0.1% improvement in your SSI rate, to power a study to evaluate that intervention would require a huge number of patients. But what if you implemented a bundle? What if you implement 8 different things, all of which have a 0.2 or a 0.3% improvement in SSI rates? So you see the impact of scale. You see the impact of doing lots of different things, which by themselves produce very small incremental benefit, but when implemented in the fashion of a bundle, produce clear, measurable benefits. And that was really the key, getting our team to understand the concept of bundles. And that's how we really saw the magic happen. And as you know, we dropped our SSI rate by half. And this, of course, led to our collaboration with the Enisquip Collaborative Network and the joy of working together to see quality improvement scale.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, just offhand, can you remember some of the elements of your bundle?
So in terms of things that we implemented that were felt to be extremely successful, the preoperative chlorhexidine shower. So we know that for clean surgery, the surgical site infection arises from bacteria that are resident in hair follicles or sebaceous glands. And so the skin prep that we do at the time of surgery has a certain impact, but preoperative showering with chlorhexidine has a far more impactful outcome. So that was a key change. Another key change was the preoperative bowel prep. As many of the surgeons know, bowel preps have fallen into and out of favor, and a lot of recent data suggested that effective bowel preps, not only the bowel preparation, which, as you know, Pierrette, is the laxative solution to empty out the colon, but also the use of oral antibiotics to decrease bacterial flora inside the colon. So we instituted routine bowel preps for all of our colonic surgery. And I have to say, one of the biggest impactful items is the wound protector. So right. we know that subcutaneous fatty tissue and fascia can handle a certain bacterial load before we see surgical site infections. So what if we cover that tissue with an impermeable barrier? And so we started using routinely for open surgery or open incisions, wound protectors. And the wound protectors increased in efficacy and in quality. And so those were some of the key changes that we introduced. We also introduced a smoking cessation program. We introduced programs to reduce movement in the operating room, meaning doors opening, because we know that affects laminar airflow in the operating room. So those were some of the changes that we introduced in our surgical site infection bundle, which, as you mentioned, was published in the Canadian Journal of Surgery and was one of our most successful papers.
Excellent. Very good. So happy to hear that. I remember when I visited Oakville Trafalgar, I remember you saying that getting that NISQIP data for the first time was sort of a call to action to improve outcomes at your hospital. Can you talk a bit about how you use that NISQIP data to like rally your troops?
So as you may know, Purette, and certainly as our colleagues in Oakville know, when we first started accumulating SSI data, so the NISQIP data, we, after 6 months of data collection, we were stunned to see how poorly we were doing in so many parameters: surgical site infection, urinary tract infection, VTE. So there's always room for improvement when you're in the bottom of the pack. So we were in the bottom 25% of performing hospitals in Ontario with regard to many of the complications that are measured by NISQIP. And by implementing bundle after bundle, we started with surgical site infections. We implemented a similar package for urinary tract infections. We moved on to blood clots, VTE. And in a matter of 2 years, we moved from the bottom 20% to the top 10%, as you know, and we were awarded an award of merit for being in the top 10% of all hospitals in North America. And right. So it's gratifying to see. So that the call to action of the burning platform was really us presenting our data. Not this is somebody else's data, but this is our institutional data. This comes from you and from me and from all the surgeons here, and we have a problem. And that really helped get our physicians, our nursing staff, and our entire surgical program on board. Because as you know, institutional or systemic change involves teamwork and involves having our nursing staff, involves having all members of our team fully engaged with the importance of that focus on quality, because quality saves money, quality improves outcomes, and focus on quality is the compassionate right thing to do when it comes to providing surgical care.
Well, you're preaching to the choir. We agree with you here at On Squin very much. But I agree. Thank you for that. I just want to shift gears for a second here too. When we talk about before the pandemic, long before we just started doing it, you were using virtual visits to care for your own patients. As the medical director for virtual care, you've written articles on improving this medium. What would be your advice to surgeons who are just getting started with this, and maybe for those who struggle with it for a variety of reasons?
So my suggestion would be understanding that we need different tools for different situations. And surgeons understand the concept of tools. Sometimes you want a Kelly clamp, sometimes you want a Coker, sometimes you need DeBakey forceps. So we use different tools for different operative procedures and for different aspects of the procedure. And so when we provide care, and this is a concept well thought out and researched in business, the concept of multi-channels. So when we provide care, some of the care that we provide needs to be done in person. Some of it can be done with a video interaction. Some can be done with secure messaging. Some can be done with a telephone call. So instead of a one-fits-all solution, My suggestion to surgeons and all physicians is understand that we should be using the right channel for the right patient at the right time. And when it comes to surgery, pre-COVID, 25% of my office interactions were virtual. In the peak of COVID, probably 90% of my interactions were virtual. And now I think I've settled into a steady state. So each surgeon, each profession or specialty will have a different optimal target. But I think at least in general surgery, about 50% of the care that we can, that we provide can be done effectively, safely, and with efficiency and compassion virtually. So if we're seeing patients with a new diagnosis of cancer, new breast lumps, new patients with hernias. So there are patients that we need to see in person to examine them and to establish that therapeutic relationship so that we can develop trust, because that's really the key to developing an effective relationship with patients. Patients need to trust that our surgical recommendations are in their best interests, and they need to develop that therapeutic relationship. But once that's developed, follow-up visits can easily be done with a telephone call or with a video visit, and often even a secure message, because you know it's well established that when patients have a medical visit, they retain perhaps 25% of the medical information that's presented. And so very often they'll have follow-up questions or they need clarification. That doesn't necessarily need an in-person visit. Can often be done with a video visit or with a telephone call, or nowadays with secure messaging. And the right tool for the right patient at the right time is really where our focus should be. And if we look south to our neighbors in the United States, for instance, the Kaiser Permanente group, which had 110 million patient interactions in 2018, so they're about half the size of the province of Ontario. Back in 2018, half of what they were doing was already virtual, and of that, 80% was done with secure messaging. So if we look to the United States, where they have a focus on return on investment, providing care with efficiency, so that they can provide effective care, but also balance their budgets. I think that's where we need to look at for ideas and for the opportunity to do what we do better. So the right tool, the right channel for the right patient at the right time, and we will find a steady state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. That sounds excellent. So where can people learn more about this and your work?
So, I write a lot, as you know, about virtual care and a variety of topics. I have a website where I collate all of my writings. It's duncanrosario.com. I would recommend having a look there. The Ontario Telemedicine Network, which has now been rolled into Ontario Health, has a variety of great articles on their website as well. And I'm happy to communicate with physicians and surgeons if they have questions about implementation of virtual care practices and how to do the right thing for their medical and surgical practices.
Thank you. I'm sure our listeners would like to hear more. That's all the time we have today. Thanks to our guest, Dr. Rosario, and to our tech support, Nancy Ahmed. Once again, I'm Purette Ferrand-Squinn, and this has been Surgical 411. Thanks for listening.